them equally. I mean, not equally as bad. What was I doing? If the Justice League movie could have been our president for 4 years, I would have been fine with that.
I would say the Justice League movie is the movie of the president version of.
Yeah, but I mean, it would have been a better president.
Yes. Right. Not by a ton, maybe.
This is the podcast. Let's just throw this out here.
Fucking. This is, 15 minute intro. No, let's just rant. Oh, God. Okay. Let's start this thing.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 170 of Marvel by the Month, the podcast that takes you through the history of Marvel Comics 1 month at a time. In this episode, that month is January 1972. My name is Brian Stratton.
Mine is Rob Milne.
Mine is Jamie Wenger.
Episode 170, but the last episode was 168, you might be saying out loud right now into your podcast listening device. And how surprised are you that here I am on a previously recorded episode answering your spoken question? That is not how parasocial relationships are supposed to work. Well, if you're wondering what happened to episode number 169, all I can say is that you're probably not a Patreon subscriber. Ooh. And you can head to patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth to start solving the mystery.
Let's resolve that awkwardness right now. Just become a subscriber.
Yeah, exactly. Mystery solved. No guests this week, guys.
Woo. Yeah.
We scared them all away that I give for guests. I just realized.
Yeah, that's the same.
I like that you're just happy to be here.
I really am. Yeah. No guests. I don't get some guests. I'm fine.
Yep. I like that you just lean into it. No, we are, man. I mean, not only has this just been a hellacious work week and otherwise week for all of us, but we are just heads down, all hands on deck for the Fancastic Four podcast crossover event that we're doing at Books with Pictures Block with Party on Saturday, September 10th. I just want to call out Block with Party as that's an inspired touch.
It really is the compliment to Fantastic Four.
I mean,
those two, just peanut butter and jelly.
It's
great.
If you're not aware, the Block Party, Block with Party, is an official Rose City Comic Con after party that runs from 6 to 10 p.m. on the Saturday of Rose City Comic Con. Books with Pictures is shutting the block down around the store. There's going to have a celebration of all the best parts of Portland comics culture. I guess we are representing the mainstream superhero portion of that. So
specifically Marvel.
Yeah. Cause we are teaming up with Douglas Wolk from the Voice of Latveria podcast, Miles Stokes from Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, and Jacob Balcom and Matt Howell from the Werewolf by Night podcast.
Or the Bronze Age Monsters.
Bronze Age Monsters. As they are going to be rebranding. We're going to talk about one single Marvel comic that features Dr. Doom, one or more X-Men, and a 1970s Marvel horror character. So get your guesses in now. Answers on a postcard. And look, if four podcasts doing one show isn't enough for you, we're also going to have three guests joining us, all of whom I'm very excited to have. On the show, horror author and Dark Horse Comics editor Jemiah Jefferson, Sloan Leong, artist and writer of Prism Stalker and A Map to the Sun, and writer of Graven Eye.
Cool.
And our good friend Katie Pride, owner of the Eisner Award-winning Books with Pictures. I guess she can just be on the show whenever she wants.
Yeah. She calls the shots. Now that she's got that medal or helmet or whatever they give you.
I think it's
power ring, belt,
cummerbund. Yeah.
Or the Sandman suit we hate so much.
Yeah. right. That's what it is. that show, I'm so looking forward to it. It's going to be such a logistical nightmare, but Rob and I are going to be spending part of our weekend going down to Books with Pictures to try to figure out how we're going to make 10 people doing a podcast work.
Do all the cables make it to where we need
them
to?
Right, that kind of stuff. It's like Ghostbusters when Egon's like looking at the apartment and he's like, this building is completely inadequate for our power needs.
And then Ray slides down the pole. That's how we get into
guys,
these things.
We already said
we
yes
should sleep here for the night, you know, try it out.
There's going to be so much good stuff at this show. As far as I'm concerned, this is where the real Rose City Comic Con is happening.
Heck yeah.
So we hope we will see you there on Saturday, September 10th. So, but that's then. We are talking about, hey, we made it to 1972.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
That's great.
Yeah. We are getting really close to my creation.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Are you, you're 73 or 74?
73.
Whoa. You're 1 year.
Yeah.
We should have a Rob birth countdown clock.
I'll just mention it every single episode now. We're getting closer, everyone. Sorry.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, definitely when we get to April or so, we'll definitely call out your conception.
Yep. We should look for the signs. I'm sure they're like, they're embedded in the comics, like in codes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Symbols and
the arcane symbols.
Runes. I'm sure runes.
Yeah. Rob. There was a prophecy. I don't know. This is kind of a funny month of Marvel Comics. I didn't think there was a lot of necessarily standout stuff, but I didn't also think there were a lot of real stinkers.
Jerry Conway's sort of getting his groove.
Holy smokes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
where I keep going, wait, is this Jerry or Roy? Mm-hmm. You know, like I can see his writing just sort of clarifying here too.
Yeah. And I think even the stuff that wasn't great was at least weird. And sometimes that's good enough.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Totally. Anyway, before we get talking about the Marvel Comics of January 1972, let's talk a little bit about what else was going on in the world in January of 1972. Rob, why don't you start us off with a little bit of comic book news?
Sure. After losing the rights to the Tarzan characters, Gold Key Comics launched a new series called Tono and Kono, the Jungle Twins.
Ooh, wow.
Of European birth, they were raised by an African chief and traveled through Africa having adventures. It was later revealed that they were of royal descent, their parents being the rulers of Glockenburg, a fictional kingdom in Europe.
That all seems reasonable.
Yeah. I don't even have a bit for that. That's
just fun to say Glockenburg. Gold Key also launched Mystery Comics Digest, which reprinted stories from Gold Key's mystery, suspense, fantasy, science fiction anthologies, Ripley's Believe It or Not, Boris Karloff's Tales of Mystery, and Twilight Zone.
Yep.
Wow. On January 1st, Kurt Waldheim of Austria became the fourth Secretary General of the United Nations. Waldheim served 2 5-year terms. Only after he became president of Austria in 1986 did the world learn that Waldheim had been a Nazi officer being investigated by the UN War Crimes Commission.
Whoops. Yay.
That's so not a good look.
Holding that job for 10 years probably kept the heat down.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's like holding important jobs could like keep you out of trouble if you were like... Huh.
Seems unlikely.
For a certain period of time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, until you're maybe no longer in that job.
Right, in which case it makes sense that you would be maybe pounced upon by the everyone who'd
by
be
by anybody who wants anything fair to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I just had some beta. I had to get...
On the 2nd of January, serial killer John Wayne Gacy committed the first of at least 33 murders, stabbing 16-year-old Timothy McCoy to death.
Casey. On the 4th of January, the first scientific electronic pocket calculator, the HP-35, was introduced by Hewlett-Packard and priced at $395.
Whoa.
Equivalent to almost $2,700 in 2022.
What?
And although handheld electronic machines that could multiply and divide, such as the Canon Pocketronic, have been made since 1971, the HP-35 could handle higher functions, including logarithms and trigonometry.
Whoa, that is crazy.
So you would just spend $2,700 if you wanted to do some trig with that thing, though. Yeah.
Whoa.
So, like, I'm not a math guy at all. I fumbled my way through advanced calculus in high school. I think I would have paid $2,700 never to have to do trigonometry.
Yeah, right. That seems like a fair trade.
Yeah.
I think you still got to plug some stuff in there, but, you know.
It'd be fine.
You just wave the calculator at it. And
it's a triangle. What do you want from me? On the 6th, television journalist Geraldo Rivera first attained national fame with his expose of neglect and abuse of mentally ill patients at the Woolbrook State School on New York's Staten Island.
Yeah, he started out in the right direction.
He could have been a great journalist, possibly.
Yeah.
And then he was Geraldo Rivera.
You know what happened? The mustache took over.
Yeah.
A long enough timeline. The mustache.
Sentient mustache. Yeah.
On the 7th of January, police located and defused time bombs that had been placed in safe deposit boxes in 8 banks in New York, Chicago, and San Francisco in July 1971. The bombs, described in an anonymous letter sent the day before, each had a 7-month fuse and would have exploded in February.
Wait, really?
Apparently.
Mm-hmm.
A 9th bomb had gone off prematurely in September. So, you know, it's not exact science.
I mean, it's hard to make a 7-month fuse.
Yeah, how would you
is that like a half-life of some kind of, you know, element?
You probably need an expensive calculator to figure it out. Yeah, right. I had to guess.
Find out who's been buying those HP 35s. You've got your person.
Follow the money.
Yeah.
On the 8th of January, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who popularized transcendental meditation, announced his world plan with the goal of establishing 3,600 centers, each with 1,000 teachers apiece. By 1976, however, interest in TM began to decline, and the plan was never realized. If only he had David Lynch, you know, to help promote it at that point.
Yep.
Timing. Is this technically a Beatles by the month?
I mean, that is Beatles adjacent.
Yeah, totally.
Yep. Totally. On the 10th, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, a confrontation between members of the Black Liberation Army left 2 sheriff's deputies dead and 14 other policemen injured. 2 BLA members were killed and 17 civilians were hurt. 13 police officers were killed by the BLA between 1970 and 1976.
Yeah, things are getting real out there. On the 12th of January, the first regulations limiting exposure to asbestos were announced by the United States Department of Labor. Widely used in construction because of its fireproof nature, asbestos had been proven to be carcinogenic in the long term. Did you guys know that?
Huh. Johnny Storm didn't.
Oh. The asbestos man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the 13th, U.S. President Richard Nixon announced that, I didn't even call him Milhouse.
I was going to say, what just happened?
Mm-hmm. Let me take that again.
Yeah, please.
U.S. President Richard Milhouse Nixon announced that 70,000 American troops would be pulled out of Vietnam by May 1st, cutting the existing force of 139,000 by half.
Hmm. On that same day, Alabama Governor George C. Wallace announced his candidacy for the Democratic Party nomination. The day before, the Internal Revenue Service had dropped its investigation of Wallace's brother, Gerald. Historian Stephen E. Ambrose suggested in his 1989 book, Nixon, The Triumph of a Politician, that Nixon had brokered a deal in order to ensure his reelection in 1972.
Yeah. Wallace, you'll remember, was the pro-segregationist former governor of Alabama.
Yeah.
Gross.
So not exactly the Democrat anybody necessarily would have wanted. But
Yeah. When your right-wing relatives and high school classmates bring up the fact that, you know, well, the Democrats invented the Ku Klux Klan, you know.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're talking about. So,
oh man, it is so beta in here today.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's getting thick. On the 14th of January at 8:00 p.m. Eastern time, Sanford and Son premiered on NBC, starring Red Fox and Damon Wilson, and based on the BBC comedy Steptoe and Son. The show ran until 1977.
Wow, that's one of those shows where, like, I knew I'd been watching cartoons for too long or something like that. Like, when that theme song came on, I was like, oh, I need to shut off the... Exactly. Yeah. I, like, need to run and shut off the TV.
I love that theme song.
Yeah, it's really great. I heard the whole thing years later.
Yeah.
I remember being excited that it depicted, you know, being a junkyard owner in what I considered to be a good light. So I wedged these in. I got a couple little metal by the months really quick.
Okay.
Since no month is ever specified anywhere, I'll mention here that a little band called Van Halen formed in Pasadena, California in 1972.
Hey, how about that?
And on the 16th of January, 1972, Blue Oyster Cult released their self-titled debut album with the single Cities on Flame with Rock and Roll.
Such a good name.
And then... not in any more metal. On the 17th,
police in Chicago arrested two college students, Alan C. Schwandner and Stephen Pera, who had planned to poison the city's water supply with typhoid and other bacteria.
Whoa, that's like supervillain territory.
That's like poisoning. Raj al Ghul stuff. Yeah. Schwandner had founded a terrorist group, Rise, R-I-S-E.
What? This couldn't get more Batman.
Yeah.
That's like a maximum Batman.
While Pera collected and grew cultures from the hospital where he worked.
Holy smokes.
The two men fled to Cuba after being released on bail. Schwandner was fatally beaten by a Cuban prison director in 1974. Pera returned to the U.S. in 1975 and was put on probation.
Whoa, that's crazy.
No more poisoning the water supply. We mean it this time.
On the 23rd, after more than 9 years, the U.S. Air Force stopped bombing Viet Cong guerrilla strongholds in South Vietnam. Approximately 4 million tons of bombs fell on South Vietnam during that period, making it the most bombed country in the history of aerial warfare.
Whoa. Four million tons of bombs.
Of just, you know, you're just talking like megatons of explosion, you know, of the power of the right. explosion. This is just the weight of the bomb.
The core yeah. thing
yeah.
from
the metal
box.
they yeah. hauled around and dropped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much?
Can you imagine like just living anywhere that's just being bombed constantly for 9 years?
I cannot. Not even a little bit.
No, and we live in an anarchist jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, right.
I mean, you listen to Fox News, it should be like that around here all the time.
Everyone I ever talked to through all of that from the Midwest and the East Coast were like, you guys okay? And I'm like, yeah, there's like four blocks where some people are protesting pretty constantly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's sort of business as usual. People are a little gruff, but I mean,
Yeah. I don't believe there was even one ton of bombs.
Yeah, I believe there might have been, you know, like 100 pounds of tear gas, but that's about it.
Yeah. Speaking of Vietnam, on the 25th of January, in a nationally televised address, President Nixon revealed that Henry Kissinger had been secretly negotiating with North Vietnamese leaders and announced a plan for peace that can end the war in Vietnam. North Vietnam rejected the proposal the next day.
it always goes that well. On January 27th, the first home video game system, Odyssey, was introduced by Magnavox. I played this thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Rob's very old.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting.
I mean, I wasn't extant yet. But,
right.
So designed by Ralph Baer, the console could be hooked up to a television set to display three square dots and one line of varying height on the screen in monochrome black and white.
My excitement is perhaps being tempered, but go on.
With differing behavior for the dots depending on the game played, players would place plastic overlays on the screen to display additional visual elements for each game to sort of zazz it up. The Odyssey retailed for $99.95 in 1972, equivalent to more than $650 today.
But a lot cheaper than a calculator at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell yeah.
Yeah.
It also didn't need to process as much. It was basically Pong and variations of Pong
A
very limited scale. Yeah.
And $650 seems like a lot, but I mean, my God, you should have seen the graphic. Just waited till Rob took a drink.
I almost, almost blew that on my nose.
On that same day, in a meeting at the office of U.S. Attorney General John N. Mitchell, G. Gordon Libby presented what he called the Gemstone Plan. Libby suggested budgeting $1 million for mugging and even kidnapping leaders of anti-Nixon demonstrators, hiring prostitutes to solicit during the 1972 Democratic National Convention, and break-ins and installation of electronic surveillance as necessary.
What? That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Mitchell rejected the plan, but retained Liddy to suggest new ideas.
And Liddy just suggested basically the same ideas over and over until they finally signed off on them.
Holy cow.
Wild.
That is bananas.
Yep. On the same day, police officers Gregory Philip Foster and Rocco W. Laurie of the New York City Police Department were fatally shot in the back by members of the Black Liberation Army while walking their patrol beat. Foster and Laurie had served together as United States Marines in the Vietnam War and had requested assignment to the same NYPD precinct.
Damn, that was a rough time.
Yep.
Yeah, seriously.
On January 28th, Amy Coney Barrett, who definitely lied under oath to the United States Senate about her intentions to uphold legal precedent in her Supreme Court confirmation hearing in 2020, was born in New Orleans, Louisiana.
I want to be fair and balanced here. There were at least three or four other justices who also lied about their intentions to uphold legal precedent.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to just single her out.
Right. Going with the flow.
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, there's
sort of an illegal precedent being set already.
Yeah, so, right. You know, there's almost half a dozen turds on that bench.
On January 31st, after 16 domestic airplane hijackings in the previous 11 years, the Federal Aviation Administration used new regulations requiring all airlines to screen passengers for weapons.
What a concept.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
That's why I could never take my knives with me.
On these double-decker planes with bars. And there were no hijackings in the United States in 1973.
Wow. Weird. Huh. So it seems like this is like some sort of form of gun control led to a complete cessation of violent behavior in certain scenarios. Interesting.
Probably a fluke.
Statistical
no way to there's no
other countries to test this against. Exactly.
Well, anyway, that's a look at what was going on in the world of January 1972. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about what was happening in the Marvel Comics of January 1972. Right here on Marvel by the Month. Hey there, if you're hearing this message right now, it means you're not listening to the special Patreon exclusive extended version of this episode. And that just makes us sad.
But not just sad for us. I mean, sure, we appreciate all of our listeners who send us that $4 a month and help us continue to produce this show week in and week out, but that's less than a dollar an episode. It's such a small amount of money that you'd hardly even notice it if you gave it to us instead of spending it on whatever costs less than a dollar a week.
Individual hard candies? extra dipping sauces. An ounce of bulk lentils.
Yeah, you know, what really makes us sad is the fact that you're missing out on so much good content. We've got more than 50 extended and exclusive episodes on our Patreon subscriber bonus feed, and we add at least one new episode almost every week.
Most of those episodes are 20, 30, even 45 minutes or more longer than the public versions.
And those extended episodes feature deeper dives into more issues with some of your favorite guests.
You like comics, kid? I mean, if you're listening to this, I'm guessing you like comics. It'd be weird if you didn't. Well, we've got extended episodes featuring Brian Michael Bendis, Matt Fraction, Chelsea Kane, Ibrahim Mustafa, Mike Alred, Tom Brevoort.
Or maybe podcasters are more your thing. You probably like podcasts, right? Mm. Well, we've got extended episodes with Elliot Kalin, Stuart Wellington, Alana Levin, Clint McElroy, Jordan Morris, and Will and Kevin Hines.
Or how about some hometown heroes from the center of the comics universe, Portland, Oregon? We've got your Katie Prides, your Douglas Wilkes's, your Joe Keating, and yes, your Miles's Stokes's.
And if you're a Patreon supporter, you're not even hearing this ad right now because you're probably listening to the extended version of this very episode, which has no ads.
So please do yourself a favor and head to patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth and become a subscriber today. Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's do the rundown. We're going to take deep dives into three issues in this episode. Fantastic Four number 121, which features the mysterious mind-blowing secret of Gabriel. Daredevil number 86, which features the return of the Ox, sort of, and a dramatic turning point in Karen Page's relationship with Matt Murdock. And Marvel feature number 3, the third Defenders story, which features the first actual Marvel Universe appearance of Zemnu, the living whole... Titan.
Yes.
Our Patreon subscribers will get to hear all of those in the extended version of this episode, but there are 7 other non-reprint Marvel Universe issues that came out this month, and we'll just give you a quick rundown on those. Jamie, take it away.
All right. Amazing Spider-Man 107, Spidey Smashes Through. Amazing Spider-Man 107 by Stan Lee and John Romita with Frank Giacoya. Spidey faces off against Spencer Smith Spider Slayer for one final time. Gwen and Flash have a heart-to-heart with an unhappy ending, mm-hmm. and J. Jonah Jameson finally gets what's coming to him a little bit.
Yeah, a little.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah, Flash winds up getting let off by the Po-Po.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Nope, that's going to lead directly into next month's episode, yeah. or next month's issue. Yeah,
huh, that, mm-hmm. that guy's got some PTSD.
Yeah. I've been digging Spider-Man lately. This wasn't my favorite in recent Spider-Man issues.
Sure.
Yeah. It's like a lot of fighting the spider robot thing.
Whenever the Spider Slayer appears, you know it's going to be mediocre.
Right. Yeah. right.
It's a replacement level villain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over in Astonishing Tales number 11, we have A Day of Tigers, which was written by Roy Thomas with art by Gil Kane and Frank Giacoya. Well, escorting Paul and Betty through the Savage Land, Kazar and Zabu's secret origin is revealed, some of which we knew, some of which we didn't, but it includes the discovery of a new element, the loss of a father, and a battle for life and death against Magor, the one-eyed.
I assumed it was Magor.
Magor? Who knows?
I think it's probably Magor.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But yeah, this is where we find out that, like, Kazar's dad, we knew he had invented that.
New steel?
It's the element that like erodes metal, right?
Yeah, right.
What's oxygen?
Yeah, exactly.
But faster.
Faster. And then some Nazis try to get it from him, he goes to the Savage Land with young Kazar and is killed there. So Kazar has been living in the Savage Land since he was like 7.
Yeah, and his brother.
His brother. That was compelling, I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like a kind of a.
He winds up being the plunderer.
Yeah, I remember him.
Oh, is that
we
true?
Already met him as the plunderer. Oh, so he's like a submarine pirate guy.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Villain.
Yeah, because like Kazar is kind of like, strong and he's assertive. An alpha, if you will.
Sure.
And then he's
got this
brother figure who's like not an alpha. I don't know if they have a word for that. I can't really relate.
So not alpha. Yeah. Over in Avengers number 98. Let Slip the Dogs of War.
Is that a Star Trek reference?
seems like, totally Star Trek. Nothing earlier.
Nope.
nothing to do with a hunchbacked king.
No, no.
So written by Roy Thomas, art by Barry Not Yet, Windsor Smith, and Sal Buscema. Fresh off the Kree Skrull War, the Avengers have only one question on their mind. Where's Goliath? Where's Clint?
Whenever Goliath's not on the screen, all the other characters should be asking, where's Goliath?
Because he's probably doing something terrible. So the question they should have on their minds is, who's Mr. Talon, leader of the Warhawks? And the answer is Hercules's warmongering half-brother and future mighty Avenger, Ares, God of War.
Yeah.
I have a question about this. It's a little spoilery
for
a movie that is current.
Oh, okay.
So maybe
a movie that is. Oh, you're talking about Thor?
Yeah. I mean, no.
Well, like, I tell you,
does it have gods in it?
It's like, hey, everybody, if you haven't seen Thor: Love and Thunder and you don't want a spoiler, ride the 30-second skip button.
Yeah. Do that. The posture of him at the end of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but it looked exactly like the pose that he was in at the end of the thing.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
I'm not sure. And I couldn't find a screen grab of it, but it seemed like, cause it's just like a weird sort of pose.
Yeah.
It seemed very particular.
Yeah. So Hercules shows up at the very end of this issue. He seems to be like a little amnesiac.
Yeah.
A little confused. Who shows up during this issue, Goliath does show back up as Hawkeye again, in a new costume.
And, that costume.
Yeah.
He's got like he looks like he is basically got Uhura's costume from Star Trek.
Sort of a Native American thing going on, kind of.
Yeah, with the little headband thing. Yeah. He's got no mask, but that skirt is short. I mean, it's a tunic, I would say, but you know.
He's obviously wearing bicycle shorts under that. Otherwise, like,
he's got to have something to catch that. That's shorter than a kilt. You know, it's a tell-all. So another thing, you know, of course, Ares, not to spoil the Wonder Woman movie, but does show up there as well. Not this Ares. I just wanted to
different areas.
Throw it off when somebody just fast forwarded 30 seconds.
Oh, so we got them.
What the hell?
I gotta say, like having Ares show up in this issue as the bad guy, like it makes me appreciate Bendis's Mighty Avengers.
Yep.
Even just a little bit more, like from the very beginning when he introduced that team, you're supposed to think there's something not quite right about these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that Iron Man went out and got a former Avengers villain to fill the Thor role. But like everyone's just kind of rolling with it.
Yeah.
You know, like it's awesome.
Yeah.
He's reformed. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Was this his first appearance? It didn't seem that way.
He has been like a background character in a couple other Hercules appearances.
Yeah. I think he was mentioned in when they're doing sort of Pantheon visits or dads.
Yeah.
He's in trouble with dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked his hair too, or his helmet hat. Something about his hair was like reminiscent of where it ends up. Like, many
yeah, he
years
had
later.
A, he kind of had a mohawk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So the Warhawk thing kind of tied in.
Oh, Hawks. I see.
I almost had a hairdo change this week, but I had to cancel it due to a cold, which would have been a little more summer appropriate and a little more of a, let's say, Viking.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
So you'll see that eventually. Wow. I'm not going to cut
just
my hair.
Just having epoxied into a pair of horns.
Yeah. I'm going to just make an Odin helmet out of my hair. It's going to take a lot of eggs.
Oh, the Odin quaff?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just... Hell's helmet.
Yeah. Speaking of helmets, maybe? I don't know. Captain America 148, The Big Sleep, written by Gary Friedrich, art by Sal Buscema. This was an all-action issue.
Yeah.
So the secret ruler of Hydra and his dad, the Kingpin, are enraged and confused to find that actually the Red Skull has been championing Nazism the whole time.
And sort of being the secret ruler of Hydra. Yeah.
It's like, God, how many tiers of secret rulers could you possibly have and still be a functional organization?
Yeah, and how do you not know what, like, the Red Skull... For all his faults, I mean, he literally wears it on his sleeve. Yeah, there's a swastika on him. Yeah. It's like...
Well, you know, sometimes swastika used to be a symbol of life in Buddhist culture.
Yeah, like, right. And, you know, history, most people alive have two people. I mean, especially comics people. Mm-hmm. There's two things that pop into your head when somebody says Nazi: Hitler. And maybe Captain America punching Hitler.
Yeah. Sure.
And then
sure.
The Red Skull.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's synonymous is a fair word to
like
use.
Even in popular culture beyond comics, people are pretty aware the Red Skull is a Nazi.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's agreed.
It's like, come on, people. When someone's trying to tell you who they are, just believe them.
Right. They're being very clear.
This reminds me, though, of the stuff we've been through in recent years where it's like, if you're at a thing and you look around and some people have swastikas, you're at the wrong thing, man.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Put down the tiki torch.
Yeah,
and
just
leave.
Hit the road, man. Yeah. There's other places to go. You're a Nazi. Yeah. You're now a Nazi accomplice at the very least.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Stop it.
And it's never too late to stop being a Nazi.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, probably.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there, I mean, maybe at Nuremberg. Yeah,
right. I mean, yes, it is too late to stop.
Yeah, but if you hit Nuremberg, you've gone too far. You're going to want to make a turn prior to.
So anybody who fast forwarded too far is now just going, what has happened?
What has happened?
Yeah. Don't go back. Yeah. Trust me. You don't need to know.
So tying up loose ends from about 50 issues ago, Captain and Cap and Falcon and Femme Force 5 face off against the fifth and final sleeper.
Yeah.
I love that the sleeper was revived. I'm like, nobody needed, that was the dumbest looking Voltron I've ever seen begin with.
Not strong.
I'm just going to plant this and maybe we'll circle around to it and maybe we won't. But I think one of the things that's really distinguishing this era of Marvel Comics for me is I really feel like we're in a holding pattern with... Like, there's not, I don't feel like there's nearly as much new ground being broken, but it really is about, like, let's go back and tell a slightly different version of that story that we told a while ago that was, you know, received really well. That happens in Fantastic Four this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It happens in this. And it kind of a little bit happens in Incredible Hulk number 150. Not to the same degree, but. Mm. This one is called Cry Hulk, Cry Havoc. It's written by Archie Goodwin, the art's by Herb Trimpe and John Severin. So in his sesquicentennial issue, Hulk mistakes green-haired mutant Lorna Dane for his long-lost love, Jarella. While Lorna reconnects with her long-lost love, Havoc,
Some incredible smashing, blasting, and heartache soon follows. When I first read this, I was thinking, it's like, this feels like kind of a retread of the last X-Men issue, 66, mm-hmm. when yeah. they're trying to get to Banner's lab to save Professor X. And, you know, there's like some love triangle stuff going on with Havoc and Polaris and Iceman. It turns out, like, I did actually go back and skim that issue, and it's not quite as one-to-one as I thought it might have been, but it did just sort of feel like, it kind of contributed to that feeling.
Spent a lot of time rehashing that, so it felt like a clip episode.
Right.
Yeah, but it still was cool to see, after the recent Beast coverage we had, the furry Beast, I'm like, the X-Men are still percolating. So I was, and I love Havoc, and I love Polaris, so I'm always happy when they show up. So I also love that Hulk is just like green-haired lady. Yeah, that's my lady.
Yep, he has a type.
Yeah, but it is obvious that there seems to be a deliberate attempt to remind the readers that the X-Men are still a thing. They're still out there.
Yeah,
like even if we're not doing anything with, and the, you know, the X-Men book is in reprints, so these characters are still, you know, on the newsstands.
I mean, Magneto was a couple months ago, right?
Right.
He popped up.
Like off-brand Magneto, but sure.
Magento.
Yeah. doing yoga, long hair.
I do love, also, the one other thing this did here was show the extent of, it was good for Havoc, like building him as a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Showing his power levels, like his power levels are able to fight Hulk levels.
Right.
And he was learning to control his powers here and decided to go to the school at the end of it. So huge, meaningful, like Miles is probably sad he's not here to talk about this right now, right? You know?
So he's sad.
Miles is probably happy he's not here right now, but he might have wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
They get into the concentric circles and how that works and like channels his power. Like it helps him modulate. It was like a Wi-Fi signal.
Yes.
I never caught that before.
Yeah.
So Havoc has the three concentric circles and like, if they're all filled in, then he's got the most powerful blast.
Yeah. That's how many bars he's got.
Yeah. It was like video game logic. That was great.
Over in Submariner number 48, Twilight of the Hunted, written by Jerry Conway, art by Gene Colan and Mike Esposito, Doom and Namor. So again, it's kind of a rehash. It's like, I feel like let's reboot 10 years ago time.
Yeah.
Doom and Namor continued their uneasy alliance, now largely based on Doom's hostage, Cindy, because he was like, at first it seemed okay, amicable. But then Doom's like, you know what? I'm going to have to take her hostage so that Namor will do what I want.
Because
it's hard to control Namor. And then Namor's like, you're really kind of a dick for taking him hostage. So taking a hostage.
Yeah.
And Doom, there was some inner monologue where he felt bad about that.
Yeah.
Which was another character building moment for Doom. He's like, I didn't want to do that. I really feel like Namor and I have a lot in common and we could be friends.
Yeah.
And it felt kind of sad.
Wait, he was like making a point to talk about how lonely he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
like the only person worthy of him is this other monarch who's also known for fits of rage and other vanity problems.
Yeah.
But yeah.
His fellow bad boy of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. Right. And I love the connective tissue to connective history to like Hickman's Illuminati version of the X-Men and
The Cabal.
Cabal. Thank you.
Yeah.
But in this also, Namor struggles to regain his memory. So Namor still doesn't remember who he is, but he knows he's Namor because people keep calling him that.
Well, and he swims by like a stingray and he's like, Stingray. Yeah. What does that ring a bell? Yeah,
it's so fun.
And also Namor, this is a pattern with Namor. He's got memory issues.
Yeah.
Like, He's basically got permanent slight dementia.
Yeah. If you tap him on the side of the head, it's a Gilligan's Island episode.
Yeah.
So while MODOK refreshes, Namor struggles to regain his memory. MODOK refreshes everybody else's memory and Doom has a moment of heroism.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that got dark there for a second. The Cindy is captured and one of the henchmen is like about to do bad things.
Oh yeah. That was dark.
It was a straight, like, I mean, just come out and say it, like Doom basically stops a rape.
Yeah.
From happening.
Yeah. And he is very upset because that is not he. So we also get to learn, not only is Doom lonely, does Doom want to be friends with Namor? Doom also has a code that where that is very wrong.
Yeah. Right. And this is only 6 months or so from the Doom learning about Doom's mom being a prisoner, right? That just happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there seems like a real push to make him like a multidimensional character.
Sure.
Then Namor's aim to break into AIM is met with a reception fit for a prince.
Yeah. Mm. It's a funny splash page that ends this, where it's like you finally see it's MODOK confronting Namor for the very first time. And then there's just like seven paragraphs of text on it. Yeah. And it just like absolutely robs the thing of its immediacy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really took the air out of the scene with the covering.
But it was cool. It's, mm-hmm. You know, when you think about it, if you think about Namor as a villain, which he often is, it's just villains. Mm-hmm. Like we just have Doom, MODOK, and Namor and AIM. Like it's just in all villains.
It's all shades of gray.
Whoops, all villains.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And poor Cindy.
And Cindy, yeah.
Yeah, the innocent bystander. Mm-hmm. Well, and then wrapping things up, we have Thor number 198, And Odin Dies, written by Jerry Conway, art by John Buscema and Vince Coletta. Volstagg is tasked with using the water from the cosmic well while Odin lies defeated, rises, and fails to end the saga of Mangog. We also, like, talking of, you know, getting some inner monologue in this month. We see like we get a glimpse of Volstagg by himself, and it's like all his like brash boastfulness where he's just like he's doubting himself and he's scared.
And we always know him to be kind of cowardly, but you get to understand his motivation. Like he becomes sort of a three-dimensional. I was going to say fleshed out, but
not to steal Eddie Izzard, but like it's like Scooby-Doo to Falstaff, like you know, you've got a cowardly character and you're rooting for him, which isn't literally like a normal approach.
No, absolutely. And then meanwhile we have Sif, Hildegard, and their guide continuing their mysterious journey on planet Blackworld, which mysteriously resembles Depression era New York City.
There's nothing that makes sense about this experience.
I don't know, but Tenna Nile shows up, the colonizer from Rigel, and she's facing off against an unrevealed nemesis. So
she's big facing off because she's got a big face. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. 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 I really hit that one out of the
you hit it really
hoop?
on the
out of the hoop. Out of the hoop.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's talk about Marvel feature number 3, A Titan Walks Among Us.
Oh, so like Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, basically.
Or Mike Ditka?
These are sports people, right?
A tight end walks among us.
Oh, buddy. This is written by Roy Thomas, art by Ross Andrew and Bill Everett. I read it in some other blogs that possibly somebody named Reese was the actual inker on this.
Oh yeah.
Apparently there were some, you know, Manny Hands situations going on. But
I would say that first splash page had me concerned.
Yeah. You can see some Everett stuff in here for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't know.
Everett's also not doing well at this point. I think he passes away the next year.
Oh, okay. So maybe there was a big assist and somehow he still got his name in here.
But, I think so. Yeah. Stan was always very loyal to Bill Everett. Like he'd worked with him. I mean, he worked with him in the 30s and 40s on Submariner. So
pre-World War II.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, but, you know, Bill, although he had been sober at this point, he was alcoholic for his entire life and was, you know, late stages. He was doing good work both in his personal life and his professional life, but you know, he'd lived pretty hard.
Mm. Yeah. I got a quick one quick aside because I've been visiting with my mom.
Sure.
My grandfather, who I'm, my middle name is for, Keith, my mom's dad died at 51 years old.
Ooh.
from cirrhosis of the liver.
Wow.
Whoa.
Just whiskeying himself to death.
Oh my gosh.
You have to work at that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it wasn't as uncommon in a couple generations ago, but it's like, it's.
Oh, so it's not like a leaving Las Vegas kind of, it was just like.
That's just, you know, lifestyle, but then nobody, there are no resources to sort of.
Sure.
Get out of that.
Yeah.
You know? And anyway. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about Wally Wood, Bill Everett, some of the other, you know, luminaries of Marvel and Timely and Atlas
totally.
That
yeah.
were, you know, they were living hard and,
huh.
and
where acute alcoholism was a much more socially acceptable thing.
Yeah. Right.
Just let the guy do his drinking.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then
he does good work.
Whoops. He's
yeah.
dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We lose more artists that way.
Yeah,
that's true. So we recently talked with the Bronze Age Monsters Werewolf by Night crew in episode 163 about Zemnu's previous appearances in the pre-superhero Journey into Mystery Marvel comics, and then those reprinted in Monsters on the Prowl in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we just sort of visited Zemnu.
Yes, which had technically not part of Marvel Universe continuity.
Yeah.
Because that was pre all that. But like like you said, it has been recently reprinted. So it's fresh in people's minds.
Yeah. So these are things from Journey into Mystery started in like 52. And mm-hmm. this was before Thor was in Journey into Mystery when Zemnu first appeared. So they just reprinted some old monster thing.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
And that's where he shows up.
So quick, I'm going to derail again.
I love this derailing.
So in my headcanon, and I think this is the way Marvel also does this, basically anything that was published prior to Fantastic Four number one, if a character winds up reappearing again, so like if Captain America shows up again or Namor or, you know, any of these characters, that's a reboot as far as I'm concerned. Like it's not the stuff that was published before August 1961 isn't in continuity,
mm-hmm.
but the stuff that is published about that character after August 1961 is rebooting that continuity in a new context.
Yeah, I buy that.
Does that work?
Yeah, off patent usage or something like that. Yeah. Or
I feel like the Cap, Namor, and John Hammond, like the original Human Torch, they kind of make their previous.
Yeah, you know, but even that stuff gets retconned because like the 1950s Captain America is not the 1940s Captain America.
True.
You know, he's like a crazy right winger who gets plastic surgery to look like Steve Rogers.
Beef Dodgers.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Beef Dodgers.
Steve who could forget? Dodgers.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, I think that fits in with Douglas's view and most people and what we started this premise on.
Yeah.
Is
right.
That is the big bang of the Marvel superhero universe is August 9th, 1961.
Yeah, and anything that like leaks in the back door has to be kind of transmogrified a little bit to fit in. Yeah.
And I think Joe Keating's the one who said that he sees Fantastic Four number one is Marvel's reboot of everything they had done previous. So it is a clean slate. We're starting over.
Yeah. If they throw somebody in there with the same look and name, their story could be completely different than what it was before.
Yeah.
Or it might still somewhat reflect it, but but it doesn't count. Like it's not canon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The universe, the continuity starts there.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Human Torch maybe still burned Hitler to death.
Possibly.
But I don't know. Hmm. That's my favorite. Pre-Marvel canon.
That's pretty great. That's a pretty great one.
Take that, Hitler.
I mean, that's
so flammable. Who would have thought?
When we read
everyone's flammable at 1200 degrees.
We read that stuff with Joe Keating and the Human Torch, the old android Human Torch, he burned everybody.
Just murdering.
And Toro, right. too. That little kid just burned a bunch of people, too.
I mean, you know, when you're a walking match, everything's going to look like a pile of oily rags, I guess. You know, you only have one real thing in your toolbox.
Right. But I mean, full on murder.
I hope immolation will solve this problem.
Because I have no other option.
Right, right. And really, honestly, if you have to be around the Human Torch, even Johnny Storm,
Yeah.
It, the reality of being around a person on fire in your room is lots of stuff catches on fire.
Yeah.
There's no way that person can be on fire and not catch things around him on fire.
Unless you use the miracle chemical compound, asbestos.
Yeah. Which is why the HQ here at the Baxter Annex is all
just
asbestos.
Wall to wall. Yeah. Yeah.
So actually not inside, but the entire exterior of this is lined with asbestos. Oh, well. So we're
lead
Johnny
paint
Storm
and proof. Asbestos. Yeah.
That's why it's called the Baxter Annex. Yeah. It's like we can have him over.
Hey, Johnny, in case he gets a little mad.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, right.
Go
which
outside.
Never happens.
No.
Why don't you go outside and say that?
Okay, so 74 tangents later.
Jesus.
We'll get to the actual book here.
I can't wait to edit this.
Well, so Zemnu, who we were talking about, was sort of reintroduced, but still outside of canon, in this reprint in Monsters on the Prowl. Well, here he is on the cover of the book stating that I've robbed the earth of the lives of three of its heroes. And now that the defenders are dead, I shall steal Earth's children. Which is
congratulations, Marvel. You have come up with the grimmest cover copy in your company's history.
He might as well just be eating somebody at this point. But,
do you think there was anything up with the fact that the cover has dialogue and a thing and the inside first page has nothing and is just.
I think they might have flipped what they were planning. Like, even if it was just layout.
Because the top of that page looks wrong to me. The first page, that's not how they make stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's no,
it looks like there's supposed to be a title there.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think they might have flipped what was going to be the splash and what was going to be the cover. And
they just got this in like, Jesus, Ross.
Come on, dude. What kind of business to run here?
So also on the cover, it shows Hulk, Namor, and Doctor Strange all laying apparently dead in the foreground with hundreds of children heading into a rocket ship in the background.
It's wild.
So it's a pretty big opener just from there. And then we get to the splash page that we're talking about with the three heroes standing in the shadow of the Titan with their backs against a wall.
Yeah.
And so...
Oh, backs against the wall. I didn't catch that.
You're just
metaphorical. Again, it's a visual art.
Here we go again. Studio Arrow.
You can't just read the words. You gotta.
But so we get all this big setup where we're like, okay, well, the defenders are gonna die here, so I don't care if I read this, but I'm gonna. Then the scene changes immediately to a sort of mix of a Mercury and Apollo style space capsule splashing down in the ocean to be picked up by an aircraft carrier. And since the Hulk has vanished for a bit, who's on that? Thunderbolt Ross. And with his civilian teenager friend, Jim Wilson, who's sometimes friend of the Hulk.
Yeah. Nothing weird about a military man just taking a teenage boy with him everywhere he goes.
Yep, perfectly normal.
And I do like the fact that Roy has to put a lengthy caption to explain why.
Yeah, even he
knew.
He's
like, he's the only guy who can calm the Hulk down. There's nothing weird about this.
Yeah, yeah. So I looked up for a reminder that Ross is with the Air Force. That's officially what the branch is he's with. So it seems plausible that he might be there for a NASA mission. Then, you know, normal Marvel lunacy, not the part where you bring a civilian kid with you, though.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's separate.
That's just normal Marvel lunacy. Ross is also there because something weird happened in space. While one of the astronauts was taking a spacewalk, they encountered a strange white mist that covered them and, you know, were pulled back into the capsule, and then communication to the capsule went dead until the two astronauts were about to splash down back through the atmosphere.
Yes.
Right. Right.
And as the capsule is about to hit the ocean, of course, a whirlpool opens up beneath it.
Why wouldn't it?
And Namor is in the neighborhood. And the way they explain that is just like, he's in the ocean, so whenever there's something in water, he's going to know what's out.
Yeah. It's like, you know, despite the fact that there's, what, three times more ocean than land? It's like, if something's happening in Europe, like, we're on the scene to investigate.
It's all land. What's the difference?
So Namor has to punch out a giant squid in order to save the space capsule.
I have a logistical question about this. So, I'm sorry. I was trying not to say it. But so this thing is going to do, I think, what it's meant to do, which is to splash down in water.
Right.
Namor creates a whirlpool.
No, he doesn't. The whirlpool just happens.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing is, a whirlpool.
Okay.
We don't even get to know why, but the whirlpool is both pulling up a giant squid from the depths and pulling down the capsule. But luckily, again, it's on water, so Namor's there. He's got the,
it's APB. Probably 11th grade science, and by that point I was all comic books. It was all Onslaught at that point.
So. Just a comic book in your science textbook. Yeah. So Namor punches out the giant squid. He flies the capsule up and out of the water of the whirlpool and lands it on the carrier. And so people are like, man, Namor saved the day. But he's mad. He had to choose between a sea creature and saving humans. He's like, I had to punch a squid to save you dumb humans. And so then a fight breaks out and he fights a bunch of sailors until Jim Wilson threatens to sick the Hulk on him.
I do love Namor has a line that really resonated with me where he's fighting all the sailors. He says, stand back, all of you. I've no wish to harm any human, but you'll yet drive me to it. Same Namor.
Yeah. Every time you set foot on land, this is what happens, buddy. Or if humans set foot in the water. So then the astronauts emerge from the capsule and they seem pretty miffed about being dangerously sent into space to try and get the first space station for the US. So that's what they were up there for.
Right.
But they're like, you know what? We're going to quit immediately. And then we're going to cash in on our fame.
Astronaut heel turn. No one saw it coming.
Yeah. And the press takes a bunch of photos of them. But when developed, all of the photos, the astronauts just show up as blurry lights in every one of them. Mm. So when they run a story, they have to use the pre-flight photos. Within the day, the astronauts known as B-Man Wagner have signed a deal to make a TV show. And that show turns out to be the Astro Nuts.
Yeah, I would watch the Astro Nuts. Yeah. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a live studio audience Saturday morning kids show featuring the astronauts in their astronaut costumes and a certain white furred Yeti-like giant known as Xemnu, who just appears. Yeah. Like there's no explanation why Xemnu, where he came from, why he's there. He's just there.
And I love this so much. Like this reads two completely different ways. So if you have read the original Xemnu stories, like you're like, oh, I know exactly where this is going. You know, like that's the bad guy.
Huh.
And I guess the cover gives it away too. But it's like, if you're coming into this, like this all just seems very strange. You know,
just real weird. Because Xemnu doesn't look like, you know, he's not Howdy Doody or Bozo the Clown. He is still a giant Yeti guy with like metal across his abdomen.
He's a cyborg Muppet.
But the rest is all the rest is all white Muppety. Like
and he doesn't have a mouth, and
it doesn't fur. I was trying to figure out through. So my only experience with Xemnu is the modern Hulk stuff,
right?
And I thought he was a whole cloth new thing that they were making up. Like, oh, remember Xemnu or whatever?
Yeah.
So this whole time, knowing where that goes, I was looking out for like sinister elements.
Yeah.
Like, is this sinister was like my my thesis question for this. And like most of the time, I don't think it is. I think it's relying on you knowing that going in. And so if not, you're like in a very weird, like disorienting.
Right. He seems like Captain Kangaroo or something. I'm trying to think of all of the children's shows that remember. But it's always weird. Like even the Pee-wee's Playhouse, it's like bizarre, so you just kind of expect a bit of bizarre for the kids. And apparently luckily the astronauts can be filmed now because they couldn't be photographed before. But now maybe it had something to do with some Xemnu pollution. So the show's let's call it plot is just about Xemnu planning on getting paid and leaving to go to his magic planet in a month. That's it. Like he just keeps saying, stick. We just want to get this show done and I get paid and I'm going to leave, kids. And then he also mentions maybe he's going to take all those lovable kid fans with him to his magic planet. And there are giant hammer gags and pie throwing gags.
It feels like WandaVision a little bit, the first couple episodes of WandaVision where there's like a laugh track, but it's like not really funny. And so it's uncomfortable.
Well, so the first panel on page 10 is what I'm looking at. It's a close up on Xemnu's eyes and the top of his head.
And he's just saying, all the way back to my magic planet. Wouldn't that be nice, boys and girls? And it's like, he's got the creepy, like, swirl eyes.
That's where it starts to seem psychotic.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. And Thunderbolt Ross and every other adult just thinks it's a terrible children's show.
A la Teletubbies.
Yeah. Or like most children's shows.
Yeah, you know? I guess that's true. Right.
Or
right.
Barney or whatever, you know. So, but the kids seem to like it. Even as some of the kids say that it kind of sucks, but they're like, I like it for some reason, even though it's dumb. Mm-hmm. And Jim Wilson sees it with Ross and decides that he needs to go and see a doctor about the strange feeling he has about the show. See what I did there? He goes and sees Dr. Strange. And Jim admits to Strange that he had an almost uncontrollable urge to do what Xemnu asks. The doctor agrees that something seems amiss. Then we cut back to the astronauts at the studio discussing how dumb the show is and that one of them really wants to quit. But, you know, there's a lot of money to make. And like in a year, they can just totally be rich and retire. So
the goal of every astronaut. Yeah. One assumes.
Yeah.
And then Jim.
Every astronaut who, spoiler alert, has been mind wiped by an alien.
And then Hulk and Jim arrive at the studio. So apparently they pitched that Hulk wants to do a little PR to get people to like him, and getting on the show would help a lot.
Yeah.
And that seems like, I don't know. They're like yes and, you know.
So we're 3 issues into the Defenders now, and Roy's really struggling to come up with ways to get these 3 guys to show up in a story.
Yeah.
Like, I was just taking the subway to you're on the subway too. I mean, it's just like the craziest.
That would have made more sense than anything that ever happens in a Defenders issue. Yeah. This is like Namor happens to be by the whirlpool because it's in the water. And then now we've got, you know, Jim going to Doctor Strange because he kind of knows him from previous random issues where they came together. So they pitch this thing. The astronauts agree to let Hulk on the show, and then Hulk and Jim fly off on a magic carpet.
Why not?
Sure.
Which we can see is really Strange's cloak of levitation.
Yeah.
And we quickly find out that it is because Strange is impersonating the Hulk to cover his identity and get, you know, the astronauts to say yes, because they wouldn't say yes to Doctor Strange, but everybody knows, everybody loves the Hulk.
Everyone, he's definitely not a murderous monster that the military is constantly trying to smash.
I get it kind of where they're like, in case there's a nefarious plot, they'll just think it's the Hulk, so he's not going to figure it out.
Right,
right.
I guess that's the closest to logic I could apply. But
that is a silly putty stretch.
Yeah, that's a Mr. Fantastic going around the world. So the show becomes so popular that it gets high viewer ratings and starts selling Xemnu action figures and games.
I got one of those action figures.
And Brian fell for it.
Which is like a cool, maybe meta Marvel thing, right? Mm-hmm. Superheroes, television shows.
Yep.
And it's toys. Still this such a dumb, even in the modern version, you're like, what is up with this wonky character?
Right.
About a month after the show started, the astronauts are doing promos for a live show with the Hulk at a massive rocket launch in Florida at the Cape.
Which Magneto took over in his first appearance. I totally would have said it.
And a certain Bruce Banner happens to see that announcement on a TV in a drugstore, and he gets angry. And you know what happens when he gets angry? So the real,
I'd like him more?
Yes.
Or no, I wouldn't like him.
You wouldn't like him. So the real Hulk punches the TV and then trashes the drugstore, and then I assume starts jumping his way to Florida. The live show begins, and Xemnu tells all of the children fans to actually come to the Cape and leave with him on the rocket.
The creepy factor skyrockets.
Right. Now it's just like dialed all the way up. We know this is psychotic and hypnotic and crazy.
Yeah.
This is a Pied Piper thing at this point.
Yeah.
Which I do like that, you know, sort of tie. And under his hypnotic power, all the children just start walking there. Everybody who's watching this show just starts walking towards Florida, wherever they are.
Yeah. And Xemnu is like, most of them aren't going to make it. And, you know, by the time I take off, but you know,
there's still going to be plenty.
Yeah,
in my rocket.
He'll gotta break some eggs.
Yeah,
he'll take as many as can get there before launch. You know, so and as the soldiers try to stop hundreds and maybe thousands of children from climbing, they're like climbing. They're headed towards an electric fence, and they're like, I don't know what to do. So they shut the power off and then the kids just climb over barbed wire and whatever.
Yeah. World War Z style. They just like keep approaching and then they go over. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got very Village of the Damned.
Yeah. Children of the Corn. It would be horrific to just be a bunch of hypnotized children storming a rocket launch.
Yeah. It's weird and uncomfortable and great.
Yeah. So it's so bizarre. Doctor Strange sheds his fake Hulk guise and starts battling Xemnu.
Yeah.
He reads Xemnu's mind and learns the whole backstory somehow.
It's just like everything comes to a screeching halt on page 18 where it's like, come on.
We were almost clear. We've been having fun.
Yeah. It's like, this is where we find out, like, if you cared. So in Xemnu's last appearance, he winds up getting basically turned into this disembodied mist. And that's the thing that takes over.
Because a mirror makes him sort of hypnotize himself into nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's what winds up getting the astronauts at the beginning of the story. And so this is Roy just being compelled to break it all down. It's like, this is how it all works. It's like, okay. I mean,
we didn't have to know.
We didn't
that.
Really need to know, you know.
Yeah. The one thing we did need to know is that, I mean, and it's cool to know that Xemnu was on a prison planet, and so you already kind of sure he's a bad guy at this point.
Okay.
So the very start of Xemnu's story and the very end where the new piece was he floats as a, you know, like sort of a
Shadow King-esque.
Yeah, cosmic floating thing through space.
Right.
Yeah. He takes the slow way because he couldn't get a rocket that would blow up the Earth to get him home. So slowly he finally gets home, but he finds out everyone on his planet is dead due to a microscopic germ. And that is a new piece of news.
Right.
And that is also why that is important to why Xemnu is Pied Pipering.
Yeah, but do you think people could relate to like being scared of a microscopic germ? I mean, that doesn't seem like something that would derail society.
Why would you? That sounds stupid. What are you going to do? Put a muzzle on? But Strange gets a mind blast from Xemnu, and Xemnu starts to head to the rocket to get the kids on board and get away. So this is where we get some more defenders,
I guess, for some reason.
The rocket's right over the ocean. I just want to mention that.
Yeah.
Why does he want the kids? Is it just because he's lonely?
Yeah, that's it. He mentions in one of the fight, I think in the next fight.
Okay.
We're on page 17, 18 of this thing. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So, but the whole rocket, so Xemnu's heading towards the rocket. The rocket collapses into the ocean. Why? Because Namor got word from maybe Strange, or because it was near the ocean.
They did introduce that squid earlier. I'm wondering if the squid.
Chekhov's squid?
Chekhov's squid, yeah. Everyone knows about Chekhov's squid.
I've been keeping an eye on these astronauts. Something's not on the up and up.
Flub, flub, flub. So the squid.
So Namor shows up big, like his entrance is.
Oh, that kick. That's the best kick.
But I mean, first he destroys a rocket.
Sure.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, he knocks a whole rocket into the ocean, and then he comes up with the kick. Namor starts fighting Xemnu until he gets mind blasted too. So now we've just had like tag in the next defender, right? So the astronaut Beam, also the former astronaut, decides he has to try and stop Xemnu, like to just sort of he's made a terrible mistake.
Yeah.
He gets crushed to death
with three fingers.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's clear he's dead. They show him laying there dead. There's more of him dead and mentions of him dead. I was like, oh, the comics code is gone.
A mention
just
of
gone.
His death scream.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
It was terrible. And then Xemnu finally notes that he wants the kids to repopulate his home planet because there's no one there. So he wants to go home, but he's taking these kids to be his new friends.
Is that Flight of the Conchords? Like, I think our children are too young to be having children.
So everything about Xemnu is the creepiest.
Yeah, right, right.
He's like, if he could make that rocket a big van with no windows, it would be.
Yeah, right.
So then
For the record, I was cheering for your joke, not for the concept of white vans escorting children for nefarious purposes.
Yeah! See, just want to get that out there.
That one might get you out of one of the counts that we get when we're in court.
Right, but, right. Declaratively.
Yeah. So now the real Hulk shows up, so we have a full Defenders issue on page, what are we, 20? He starts fighting Xemnu, and luckily, according to Doctor Strange, Hulk's brain was not large enough for Xemnu to grab onto and paralyze.
Right.
Which Hulk is unsure about being a compliment or an insult because he's Hulk.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, Hulk's so dumb that Xemnu can't mind blast.
Yeah. This one also, I feel like Roy's had it, he's tried to have this both ways. Like, he often refers to Hulk as having a really childlike mind. So it's like Xemnu can hypnotize children, but he can't hypnotize the Hulk.
It seems like he could just be like, Hulk, come with me. And Hulk could be like, okay.
Oh, yeah. Do you have candy in that van?
Yeah.
How much candy? So Hulk pummels Xemnu until Xemnu dissolves into a mist again and floats away.
Yeah.
Soldiers surround the Hulk, so he knocks them away. Namor gets mad about this too. And then Namor and Hulk just jump away, and they both vow to never heed the call of the Defenders again.
Not the last one.
Each time they're like, why are we defending people? It's again, it's like the Silver Surfer motive, but they're just less smart about
and
it.
And guess who winds up joining the team? Another guy is like, I will never defend these people.
Yeah, everybody who hates humans and never wants to defend them always ends up coming together as the Defenders.
Yep.
And so that's pretty much where this wraps up. But that is just a whole amusement park of an issue. Yes. It is cuckoo crazy. Bananas,
for sure.
I dug it.
I loved it.
The art was uneven in places, but generally I really liked it.
Some places it was really great.
Yeah.
And the whole astronauts, just the whole concept that a space alien is going to infect you or hypnotize you and make you make a children's show.
Yeah.
So, and again, they revisit this in the Immortal Hulk.
In Ewing's run.
Yeah. Right. It was so rewarding reading this after that.
Yeah. Yes.
Which isn't the order you're supposed to read this
in. Which is the same way I did too.
Yeah.
But it is just to see how faithful it was to this and still so modern in its context.
Right.
Yeah. And I also have to say, like, I know, like, some people find Xemnu's design kind of silly, but I think it's such a unique combination of wildly disparate elements that, I think each individual part is silly, but somehow the sum of the parts is real. Like, the metal skull cap with the Yeti body and the swirly eyes, like there's something about it. I can't put my finger on it.
It is,
I love it.
It's got, it is like a, like, what is the Meet the Feebles? It's like a, it's like a Muppet gone wrong.
Yes.
But a giant, like if Big Bird or Snuffleupagus was totally evil.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You know, it's like just got this feel where it's like, he's fuzzy. You kind of want to hug him, but you instantly understand that
there's
something
wrong.
Yeah. And of course he wants to take all the children away with him in his spaceship.
Which is like ancient myth kind of stuff, right? Like every culture has their myth of like children being led away to their doom by, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. The Pied Piper and you know,
other ones, probably
Michael Jackson.
You know, this started with the capsule itself was called Castor and Pollux. So it was this reference to the Gemini twins. So then I was like, well, how I was looking up some, you know, Greek myths trying to figure out if there was a good tie, but I couldn't find the connection, but I feel like Roy was trying to do something there too.
Remind us that
he went to college.
Yeah.
So yeah, I feel like a lot of those are red herrings of just Roy being like, got a degree.
Yeah.
And
I mean, like there's so much in the story that like there's weird leaps. It's probably like 50% too much plot. Well, like as happens with a lot of Roy Thomas stories, but the whole concept, like when you boil it down, the idea of taking Xemnu and making him the star of a children's show and stealing children is such a great,
it's awesome.
Nut of a concept.
It's insane. It's insanely different too than anything we've seen. And the fact that they like dust off this old
ridiculous
monster and then make it into a dumb children's show.
Yeah.
It's
dumb, but creepy.
Yeah, yeah. Like what he did in the horror book.
Yeah.
Or the sci-fi whatever horror, he just sort of hypnotized everyone to build him a giant ship that was going to destroy the Earth. But then adding this element of he uses a children's show to hypnotize everyone and steal the kids.
Yeah.
That makes him just the creepiest villain ever.
Yeah. Hands down.
Yep. Love it.
No argument.
All right. Well, that's the Marvel Comics of January 1972. The only thing that remains for us gentlemen is to share our astonishing takes, our recommendations for things that our listeners might want to check out that are not the Marvel Comics of January 1972. I will lead off with a recommendation for Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow by Tom King and Bilquis Evely. So this makes two DC recommendations for me in 2 weeks. Don't think I don't realize that. I just have to echo what Sean Baby said on his last appearance. This book is fantastic. I don't know that I've ever read a truly great superhero story prior to this. I think I've always been open to reading a great Supergirl story. I just don't think that there was all that much support to tell one. I mean, I mostly read DC Comics starting in the era, like right after Crisis, where Supergirl was killed in Crisis and they just didn't have a Supergirl, in post-Crisis, immediately post-Crisis. But this story does everything that a super character story should tell. It shows its hero making the decision time and time again to do the right thing instead of the easy thing or the satisfying thing. It's always frustrating in the moment that they don't just cut loose and resolve the thing in half a page of explosive violence. But you're always happy that they don't do that in the end, because the thing that makes them super isn't their power, but their restraint and their goodness. It's a story about the slow, inexorable pursuit of justice. It's also about how Supergirl is not as nice as her cousin.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to immediately reread it as soon as I finished it. It's going to be maybe the only mainstream superhero book that my wife is going to read this year. And I think it's wild how little fanfare that it's getting relative to everything else that Tom King has done lately. I think it's his best book since Vision, quite honestly.
When did this happen?
The trade just came out like two, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Okay. But it's like, I mean, like Mr. Miracle got a ton of.
I just recommended
which
that.
Which is terrific. Yeah, a couple episodes. Mr. Miracle's terrific. Strange Adventures is terrific. I like pretty much all of Tom King's like limited series stuff that he's done. But I think this just like is absolutely a slam dunk, and I love it so much.
I'm excited because I missed that Mr. Miracle thing, which Jamie gave me.
Yeah.
Was such a breath of fresh air for fourth world stuff, and you know, sort of in its own corner, but but also just this homage to Jack Kirby and and so I'm excited. Like I liked Vision pretty, I mean, I just liked the whole premise of that, which they kind of picked up for WandaVision to some extent, but I'm hoping that they have this at Books with Pictures tomorrow and I will buy it.
It's space science fiction True Grit.
Awesome.
Whoa.
So awesome.
I think that's a strong sell.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in addition to going to buy that is, I will say, it's a bit of a stretch for me for my recommendation this week, because I read all of the Eternaut, which you just recently recommended, which was that Argentinian comic strip, that Fantagraphics had collected, and it's dense, you know, it's like a 400 page book of that comic strip. I mean, it's bigger panels and easier to get through, but it's still it's a meaty apocalyptic story. So I'm just saying that's still worth the read if you like comics history, do that. But I read a pretty cool graphic novel, came out in October of 2021, called Apocalypse 91: Revolution Never Sleeps. It was created to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Public Enemy album, Apocalypse 91, The Enemy Strikes Black.
Okay, cool.
And so it's made by Chuck D. Oh, you know, all the characters are owned by Chuck D and Public Enemy. So I read some of these books put out by Z2 Comics. I have recommended the, it's like co-promotions with Music Acts. This one was a higher caliber, I thought.
and it's a nice sci-fi story, and it's very coherent. With, nice. Compared to like the anthology style book for Anthrax Among the Living, which I had recommended recently. Some illustrations and some of the story come straight from Chuck D, and the overarching message of the book is consistent with Public Enemy's lasting anthems about using art in any medium to overthrow the power of white supremacy or whatever oppressive power is ruling. There's some great comics creators participating in making this too. Writers, Evan Narcisse, Regine Sawyer, Shea Grayson, and Troy Jeffrey Allen. Artist Coy Turnbull, Carlos Oliveris, and Butch Mappa, with Mike Del Mundo doing the cover.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, cool.
So it's a, you know, like you kind of expect it's this sort of co-promotion thing. So you're like, if it's okay, it's okay.
Right. Yeah.
But this was like its own story, and it was its own unique story, not, you know, reflecting directly the song themes or stories, but tying them all together into a bigger.
So it's not cheeseball execution of the lyrics.
Yeah. It's which like is, that. Which was a little bit more of the Anthrax book, was just sort of like, some of them were like what you think of when you hear this thing. And some of it were reenacting lyrics, but this
it's not
was,
the Sgt. Pepper's movie.
No, no. Although Billy Preston was awesome and the Bee Gees were awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But Frampton, comes not alive.
Oh, poor little out.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm gonna do three, but I'm doing them quick.
All right.
So I don't read comics in bed at night on my iPad because it's too bright. I feel like it's disrespectful to my partner. Yep. So I only read books on my iPad at night in black mode with the super dark setting turned on.
Yeah.
So my vision dies by the time I'm 50.
Yep. Trying to kill it fast.
Yeah. Exactly. So book wise, I'm gonna recommend Chuck Klosterman's '90s. The 90s. Oh my God. I can't express how in love with this book I was. I was saying before off mic earlier, literally every sentence made me think about something or appreciate something or think about something in a new light. It's cool. Just awesome. For fans of his, like, this is the next evolution of the way he thinks and organizes sentences and thoughts. It's, I can't praise it enough. If you read it and you don't like it, I'll send you $5.
wow.
TV wise, two things. One, like obviously the She-Hulk.
Yeah.
I've not started it yet.
I just finished episode two. It's so sweetly self-aware and
oh my God,
all of the things that we've mentioned about He-Hulk and other things like that.
It is so smart and so good, and she's wonderful. Anyone who's bothered by the effects, like, be quiet, man. Like, it's fine. Like, it just enjoy an awesome show. It's given you MCU in small bites in like a delicious way. Like, you can't go to the movies and see Mark Ruffalo right now.
But he's here.
He's there.
Plenty.
It's doing Marvel stuff. It's the tone, the quality. I mean, I can't recommend it enough. Tatiana Maslany is amazing. I don't know if I'm saying her name right. I think so. She just gives... It's like what you always kind of thought this character might sound like.
Yep.
Put on the screen.
It feels like the Peter David voice too a lot.
Yeah. You know,
of She-Hulk. So
yeah, nice. Quippy and fun. I literally have no complaints about the show. And then in non-comic book world, I've been catching up on For All Mankind. Do you watch that?
Yeah, I watched all of it.
Alt-History Space Race, right?
Yeah. So the premise of season one was, what if the Russians won the space race? Like, not...
And that's not spoiling because it's very quickly and it's also like in the description of the show.
It's like, that's like the first or second episode.
Person on the moon is a cosmonaut.
Okay.
And after that, what happens to history?
Okay.
And it's like everyone's in the bar like, and like where life goes from there. And I thought this was a really satisfying one season show. And then they did another season, and I was like, oh, wow, they're pulling out more material for this? That's great. And it was fine. And by the end, I was like, what? Wait, maybe the show is great. And like, maybe I'm alone, but maybe it's great.
I was like, that
was a fun thing, and it can be over now, and I'll be the only one who ever watched it. Season three is bananas.
Yep.
I'm having a tough time at work. I need to go to bed early so I can get up earlier and work. And like, I can't go to bed early because I need to watch another episode of the show.
I just ripped through all of the seasons.
All right, flipping crazy.
Sold.
I recommend.
Sold in the room.
It's got stuff that's like getting a little right stuff. It's got stuff that's Apollo 13, like that really feels like those movies, mm-hmm. and that kind of, or even 2001 Space Odyssey. But it's also gets a little dumb and soap opera-y sometimes, but it's still worth it. You'll just be invested in it.
Nice.
And there are bits where you're like, oh, this is like what my parents watch. Like, they watch dramas like this. Uh-huh. And you're like, yeah, I'm okay. Now I'm old. That's fine. But then there's other bits where, like, I don't want to move away from the mic, but, like, I was on the couch. You know, we're old. The phones exist. So you're kind of like half on your phone or your iPad or your laptop. I literally, like, put my device aside and, like, leaned forward to see. I was like,
I'm working with it on, and I just shut my laptop.
and I can't, I can't remember the last time I did that with a show. I was like, I'm so invested. And
they
excited.
They do the thing in any of those movies where there's a space launch or landing, you know, where there's the countdown, and you're like, you suddenly are like holding your breath. And it happens many times in this show, but every time it happens, you're doing that. You're just breathless waiting to see what happens.
It's
so hard sci-fi too at the same time.
And I thought this was like a trash, dumb, silly show that like I would watch and be embarrassed about. And it's not that.
And it's on Apple TV.
It is.
Nice. There you go.
Apple TV and our podcast, isn't that also on an Apple product?
Maybe we should get like a sponsor. Maybe somebody who might be involved with Apple would like to give us a big bunch of money.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Would you guys have money laying around?
We'll take some.
Yeah. We'd love it. Well, so that is like 3 to 5 great recommendations and a fun and strange month of Marvel Comics. We're into 1972. I'm looking forward to seeing where this year takes us. I know we have... before this season is over, we're going to have a couple really interesting and fun episodes coming up. So welcome to 1972, everybody. Thanks for listening. And hey, come and see us and the Werewolf by Night podcast and Voice of Latveria and Miles from Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men and a bunch of other cool folks live Saturday, September 10th at Books with Pictures, Block with Party.
Oh, my God. So crazy. Will I put deodorant on my face? I might.
Yeah.
I might need to. It's going to be that intense.
Yeah. It's, I mean, at this point, I'm taking it on faith that we will figure out a way to make this whole thing work. I think it's going to be a great show.
It'll happen. It'll happen even if we're just using a megaphone.
Yep. Yeah. There's too much talent here to not have this be an absolute blast. Hey, if that's not enough for you, or if you can't come to that show, you will probably want to subscribe to our Patreon for the fantastic price of $4 a month at patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth and get exclusive content, including the recording of that show once it's ready to be shared. Review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever you're using to listen to us. If you'd like some free stuff in the mail, send us a screenshot of your 5-star review to marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram at marvelbythemonth, and marvelbythemonth.com has links to our other social channels as well as our shop. That is all for now. My name is Brian Stratton.
I'm Rob Milne.
I'm Jamie Wenger.
We'll see you next week for next month. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inside and read comics.
Are those names significant in any way?
I don't think so. They said
them enough times that I think they were significant to someone.
Okay.
Is my theory.
May have been an inside joke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you need to go somewhere, Jack? Okay. Go ahead.
Are you recording a podcast?
Yeah.
It's hard to tell.
I mean, this is how we talk all the time, but yeah, also sometimes we're recording. Okay. Are you going to come back in?
Yes.
Okay.
There was just this really cool thing.
Okay.
In the basement is one of A-Game's friends, and they, like, went into the Trial of the Sword and went through the wall, and it's, like, a whole new dream universe.
Whoa.
Enjoy it.
Cool.
Okay.